This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 7th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 250. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. The Is It Just Me commentary featuring former Canadian diplomat Charles Burton and Canadian Friends of Hong Kong's Fenella Sung. And on the big deal feature, international supply chain expert Glenn Ross on Ukraine, Taiwan, and what it all means to the Main Street economy. But first, Is It Just Me? Is it just me, or does United States House Speaker Nancy Pelosi have more courage in one of her fingernails than the entire Justin Trudeau Liberal cabinet? You may not agree with the California Democrat all the time. She's next in line for the presidency after Vice President Kamala Harris. But her one-day visit to Taiwan was a necessary gesture to support the island nation and its democratically elected female leader, Tsai Ing-wen.
And now more than ever, America's solidarity with Taiwan is crucial, and that is the message we are bringing here today. We will not abandon our commitment to Taiwan.
In 1991, 2 years after the Chinese army snuffed out the peaceful students' protest in Tiananmen Square, Pelosi was among a trio of U.S. politicians who went there and unfurled a small sign in English and Chinese that said, "To those who died for democracy in China."
It is a memory which still burns bright, and it is a cause which will never die.
No.
Chinese police then told Representatives Ben Jones of Georgia, Nancy Pelosi of California, and John Miller of Washington to leave the square. News crews were in the middle, and the CNN crew was pushed by police.
The West cannot afford to be afraid of dictator Xi Jinping, whose goal is to invade and annex Taiwan, which is the size of Vancouver Island, but with 23 million people. In 2019, before that year's federal election, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau hosted a Women Deliver feminist conference in Vancouver. He declared himself a feminist. Now it's time to back up your words, Mr. Prime Minister. But just like he was in the early days of another China crisis that we know as the coronavirus pandemic, Trudeau is on vacation at a Costa Rican hideaway. Here is Charles Burton, a former diplomat at Canada's Beijing embassy, who is now with the Macdonald Laurier Institute.
Pelosi went into Taiwan, and to our knowledge, her airplane and the accompanying American military aircraft protecting her were not harassed by People's Liberation Air Force, the People's Liberation Army Air Force. It's always the PLAAF that could have led to a serious incident if there'd been some kind of accident, you know, if they'd been playing chicken with each other and there was a collision. So, you know, so far so good. But I think it is indicative of heightening tensions between China and the United States. And Canada is nowhere to be seen in any of this. We haven't even had an ambassador in Beijing since Dominic Barton decamped in December 2021, which mm-hmm. is sort of extraordinary. Why we wouldn't think that it was important to have someone filling the slot, because, you know, you can't engage with the Chinese regime at the same level unless you have a fully accredited ambassador in place.
Fenella Sung of the Canadian Friends of Hong Kong.
And that has been a joke flying around in these past 2 days in the Chinese media, more Chinese social media, that all these missiles or these fire jets or all this exercise, they have to be very precise because they cannot mishit, because they are aimed to not to hit anything. So if you miscalculate an inch, that if you mistakenly hit anything, then you will be in trouble because the tension is so high that you will trigger off further conflicts. But that shows the intention of all this exercise. It's meant to scare, to mask the inward cowardness of the CCP government, and also just a kind of PR show to show the government, to show the people that I'm really strong. And that's because of the internal politics that Xi Jinping wants to be in full control of the internal politics while he's going into that that very important meeting of the CCP that he wants to be to assume later for the third term.
Meanwhile, the most visible foreign diplomat in BC has left her post after almost 5 years. People's Republic of China Consul General Tang Xiaoling bid farewell on July 28th to Vancouver. Tang, Xi Jinping's mouthpiece on the West Coast, was often photographed with local politicians who turned a blind eye to China's human rights abuses. She lashed out at Canadian politicians who didn't kowtow to Beijing, even Vancouver Mayor Kennedy Stewart, after he suggested that Vancouver forge a friendship with Kaohsiung, Taiwan. Tang arrived in Vancouver in late 2017, a year before Meng Wanzhou's sensational arrest and extradition case, which dominated headlines until last fall when she flew home and China let hostages Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig return to Canada. Here's Charles Burton.
She has been exceptionally effective in engaging in this United Front work, which, you know, has a strong component of state security and espionage connections. So, you know, I think that her departure is probably something that we would welcome as this kind of United Front work engagement of people, particularly persons of Chinese origin who have Canadian citizenship, is not really consistent with normal diplomatic function. So, you know, one hopes that we will see someone coming into the job who will be more oriented towards diplomatic activities consistent with their mandate as a consul general, like other consul generals in Vancouver, and not one who has such an explicitly political role in seeking to divert the loyalty of Canadians towards a foreign country, that being China.
Fenella Song.
Her posting in Hong Kong kind of was expected to be her benefit so that she can communicate directly with the Cantonese-speaking communities here. Because frankly speaking, not many of the consul general ever posted to Vancouver spoke Cantonese at all. But my understanding is that though her native is Mandarin, but she also understands and also speaks some Cantonese as well. So that's perceived to be her advantage. But unfortunately, I think from the CCP's point of view, her posting really coincided with the many twists and turns in the CCP's handling, especially their relationship with their own internal politics as well as the international world.
What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. 6 months ago last week, Xi Jinping hosted Vladimir Putin at the Beijing Olympics, while Western leaders boycotted the Games due to China's human rights abuses, including the genocide of Uyghur Muslims in Xinjiang province. Xi and Putin announced a no-limits alliance. Later that month, Russia invaded Ukraine. Last week, China's military surrounded Taiwan after U.S. Speaker Nancy Pelosi's one-day visit. Meanwhile, the coronavirus pandemic continues, and monkeypox is now spreading. Joining me to talk about the geopolitical and economic forces that are turning the world upside down in 2022 is international supply chain expert Glenn Ross. He is president of ACC Group in Surrey, British Columbia. Glenn has turned his weekly newsletter on supply chains into a daily update on the war in Ukraine. I asked Glenn Ross about the situation in Ukraine after almost 6 months.
Not a good position. Canada, we tied our umbilical cords to Americans down south, and thank God for that. The EU is continuing unabated. You are looking at 30 members of NATO right now. That should grow. Sorry, the EU is 30 members. NATO will grow by 2 or 3 or 4 members in the next 5 years, 4 years. Ukraine, unfortunately for Ukraine, is in the middle of a very strategic part. It's one of the 6 breadbaskets of the world. If Russia gets control of Ukraine, it controls the world food supply, essentially. Ukraine's middle. So you look at Napoleon, you look at the Mongols, you look at Hitler. They all went through Ukraine to get from east to west or west to east, because there's no mountains in Ukraine and Belarus. If you go further north or south, you start getting the mountainous areas of Balkans down towards the Baltics in the north. Not a good place to have a war. And that's why Ukraine is strategically important. But eastern Ukraine, the Donbas, is where the industry resides and where all the wheat and stuff comes. 80% of the wheat and grain comes out of that part of the world. Russia gets control of that. They control world food supply. Right now, they're trying to do that. Russia this morning announced that they're not going to have the same crop this year as they had last year. What are they doing? They're sending a message that the availability of grain is going to get constricted. It's going to push prices up. They're hoping for 2 things. The first thing is a third world will revolt and say this is brought on by NATO and by Ukraine. And they will try, and he's hoping they will absolve him of any involvement, even though he's gone into Ukraine. The other 2 things are Putin's waiting for 2 things, general winter and time. Time, if it comes around, will be on the Ukrainian side. But general winter defeated Hitler. He also defeated Napoleon and guys before that, even the Normans when they came down the rivers. Winter hits Ukraine in December through February. That's why there's a flurry of activity right now in the Donbas and the southeastern Ukraine. Ukraine knows it has to capture back that territory between now and the end of October, end of November, sorry. If Russia's still there and the ground hardens, all bets are off. Russia's running out of munitions. It has no troops left. It's got about a 75 to 80% attrition rate. They're heading for defeat. And everybody's aware of that. Hence, suddenly, out of the blue, you start seeing these long-range howitzers are starting to arrive in Ukraine together with people being trained. Underneath the radar screen, America is training Ukrainian pilots to fly American jets. Huge increase in stuff. But America knows this is not about Russia. It's not about Ukraine. This is about China in 30 to 35 years' time. Russia falls east, bad news. Russia falls west, bad news for China. So there's a lot of stuff going on here. It's not just about that. The crucibles in the immediate term is going to be the food crisis, which Russia's pushing very hard, and the supply chain crisis. 200,000 containers are stuck in Russia because of sanctions. They can't get out. TEUs, which is short. They own 12% of the world's shipping fleet. They're trying to reflag them right now. This morning, 3 more ships of grain left Odessa to go down to Turkey. It's minuscule, absolutely minuscule. It's not going to solve the food problem. So we're heading into uncharted territories, Bob, to put it mildly. And then, of course, Russia is salivating that China and America are having this spat because it deflects away from themselves. And they're hoping they can get America on 2 or 3 fronts. Not going to happen, but that's what they're hoping.
What about Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin's alliance? And how does Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan factor?
So China was sold a dummy, in my opinion. Told us it was very quick and easy, dirty, and we're back on track. So they supported it with their meeting down at the Olympics, as you said. The problem is this is not China's best bet at the moment now. Jinping's in for his election, trying to get his third re-election. So he has to project himself as a strong man. His economy is in the doldrums. They're down at 2.2 to 2.6% GDP estimate against an original estimate of 5.5%. They are desperately in need of jobs and foreign revenue. 68% of the foreign revenue comes from the EU and the USA. So all America has to do is constrict that 68% of the EU down by 10%. That takes the GDP in China down to below 2% to maybe 1.5%. The majority of Chinese laborers are non-Han Chinese, conscripted in from the rural areas to provide cheap labor in the manufacturing areas. They send money home every week. That's how they subsist in their home areas, right out there in the bushveld and the mountains. They're getting laid off left, right, and center. Huge risk to China, huge, huge risk to China. Their real estate, which is half of the economy, is tanking. Evergrande, these guys are all taking bad things. So from the Ukrainian thing came along at a very bad time. And America, no doubt, has told them, as has the EU, if you involve yourself with Russia, we'll cut you short. We'll screw your whole economy. You've seen they've provided no technical assistance and no military assistance to Russia at all. All they've done is buy cheap oil, as has Saudi Arabia, as has India, because it's going cheap. They're taking it, they're bolstering their reserves, and it's a good strategic move. The BRI, the Belt and Road Initiative, which is their plan for the future. China works on a thing called Xi, C-H-I, Xi, which is based on seven principles. And it's okay for them to steal from their adversaries like America and pass that information back into industry, because that's part and parcel of what it is they do and how they believe in it. But it's a 100-year marathon, Bob. They want to have a huge celebration by 2049, which is the 100-year marathon, 100-year anniversary of the Great March with Mao Zedong. But the BRI has having problems. We know Sri Lanka has gone belly up. We know Pakistan's gone belly up. Zambia yesterday announced they are withdrawing from contracts. The Philippines last night said they are withdrawing from contracts on the BRI. All the countries in the BRI are on what they call bilateral agreements with China. American, Japan, and the EU refused to get involved because they wanted multilateral agreements, and China wouldn't agree to that. So what China does is goes in and lends them billions of dollars on the proviso that should they default, China can take over strategic assets in their country. So China will then go and say, okay, in Sri Lanka, we're going to build the port of Colombo and the northern port. Now China's running that because they can't pay their debts to China. So okay, fine, now we exercise our rights. You've got Djibouti linking in the Red Sea. They have control of that port. They're down in the Solomon Islands, which is just north of Australia. Solomon Islands is a nondescript bunch of islands, 70,000 people. But you put a port there, now you're in a very strategic location. They're very friendly with Argentina. One of my sources told me they've said to Argentina, we will arm you for free so that you can go back and take back the Malvinas, which is Falkland Islands. And the reason for that is to distract attention by America, the UK, and NATO away from Europe and from Taiwan. So now we get to Taiwan. Half of the world's shipping goes through the Taiwan Strait. It's incredibly important. Then it goes down through the Malacca Straits, which is the busiest sea lanes in the world. They also have some type of leverage in the Straits of Hormuz, where 38% of the world's oil goes through from the North African ports down into the Indian Ocean. So you can see what they're doing. They're trying to get what they call their blue policy, which is an ocean-based policy. America is the only country in the history of the world that controls all the oceans. Now, America views that control as part and parcel of national security and the international control of the dollar. You fiddle with that, you become an immediate adversary of America, no matter who you are, whether you're Germany, whether you're China, whether you're Ukraine or Japan. If you fiddle with that equation, you're going to run foul of the Americans because they believe that's the mainstay of their national security purpose. So the control of the oceans, that's why they have all these aircraft carriers out there. But the Ukraine war has shown the fallacy of big pieces of equipment. The tank is days are numbered. The aircraft carriers, days are numbered. China has these, what they call rail guns, all over the South China Sea on these little fishing vessels. Good sacrifice. $1 million projectile sinks at $1 billion aircraft carrier. Good investment. So it's heading to a position where it's not good. And then we come to this week. 11 missiles fired over to Taiwanese space. Some of them landing just south of Okinawa in Japan's exclusive zone. The island of Hataruma. So it's very bellicose. It's very, very aggressive. But don't forget, Xi Jinping has to show that he's a strong man. He has to show that he's in control. This war in Ukraine is not on his timing zone. His economy is going south. His real estate business, which is really the backbone of his entire economy, outside of the jobs he creates with exports. Not a good situation. Not a good situation at all. Then Pelosi goes and visits Taiwan. Something tells me, Bob, that wasn't just a happenstance. Somebody's prodding the Chinese. They're prodding them to see what it is. So if you take a step back and you look at strategy in the overall sense, the geo-military strategy, America knows that China is going to be the biggest economy in the next 5 to 10 years. China will never beat the Americans militarily. So they're boxing clever. They're using electronics. They're using hacking and all that type of stuff, cyberspace and that type of stuff. But they've also got some very clever missiles. They've got hypersonic missiles, they've got the Dongfeng missiles, and they've got these little boats floating around everywhere with little missiles on them. The problem with Taiwan is it's waterbound. For China to invade Taiwan will be extremely risky and extremely expensive. For America to defend Taiwan is just about impossible. To defend China, you've got to send planes in there, which means your planes have to have the range to reach there. Aircraft carrier planes go 300-400 miles and they've got to come back. That means the aircraft carriers will go no closer than 200 miles to Taiwan. All the little Chinese islands are waiting for that. That's the Chinese Navy, those little islands they built with these Dongfeng missiles and stuff in there. A Chinese guy I spoke to some time ago said to me, we don't need to defeat the Americans militarily and navally. All we need to do is to stop them getting into Taiwan. All our missiles need to do is reach Tokyo, Seoul, and other parts of the South China Sea. That's all we need to do. We have the nuclear weapons if we have to go that way, but that's enough to deter the Americans. So China's becoming more bellicose. The underbelly of China is their trade, is their current economic parts, and you have a bunch of young people, the new generation, the millennials, the Chinese millennials are coming through with different thought sets. So we're in a precarious position right now. I think what's happening in Taiwan with these missiles flying over the Taiwan Strait and those things is them sending a message. I think it'll be received as such, and then it'll go back to what it was before, but a bit more awareness. But China is definitely becoming more belligerent and more bellicose. The people I speak to said to me that the youngsters are not afraid of America. They don't respect America, and they firmly believe they will be better than America in the next 5 to 10 years.
What does this all mean for Wall Street and Main Street? What next for the pocketbooks of Canadians?
So let's start with the price of gas. Gas is, relatively speaking, it's dropped. It's low now. The price of oil is down to pre-Ukrainian day levels. But that's because they have the inventories, and the inventory is going to run out shortly. So expect to see the price of gas and diesel to go up again quite dramatically in the next 3 to 4 months. Retailers in North America, including Canada, are sitting on enormous amounts of inventory. When the pandemic came around, the consumers went home, which meant they now had all the stuff that suited the home, computers, desks, home office equipment and stuff, which changed the whole dynamic of what was manufactured. China was caught short, and they had all this production on their stocks, on their docks, which they couldn't ship. And the new orders coming through wasn't for that stuff anymore. It's for all the new stuff, electronics and stuff, which caused a run on microchips. Microchips are 68% sourced out of Taiwan, speaks for itself. So the problem is going to be that until those inventories come down and the retailers readjust, you're going to see a large continuing problem for Main Street in North America. Now, where you're going to see this happening is in two places. One is in healthcare. The other one's going to be in the SBE, the small business enterprises. You look at Dollar Tree. Dollar Tree's average container is about $31,000 US for 40-foot container entrance, average. They used to pay $1,600, $1,850 for a 40-foot can to come from China to North America. And that's allowed them to come in with these dollar prices. They also buy what they call the secondary market. They buy all the stuff that Walmart and these guys can't sell, and they sell it off at a discount. The problem is that $1,850 transit cost for a 40-foot container, ocean freight, climbed as high as $38,000, $39,000 if you could find an empty container in China, because they sent all those containers all over the world with PPE equipment and never came back. So you pay another $2,500 just to find an empty container. And you're finding people like Walmart are battling for containers. They ship nearly 1 million containers a year. They are the big dog in the manger. Even they are battling. So who are the small business guys? There's been a huge failure rate in small business enterprises in America and Canada in the last 6 months. Huge. Because Dollar Tree, for argument's sake, even though I think they're going to become called $5 Tree shortly. Because if the price of ocean freight is now 40% more than the price of the actual goods inside the can, the container, that knocks them out of the business. That takes away the whole basement of opportunity, which is their cheap prices. So you're going to see a massive effect on the SBE, the small business enterprises. At the same time, when America exited the International Postal Union Agreement in the first year of the Trump administration, they, for good and bad reasons, it opened Pandora's box for the Chinese, because now you have a plethora of courier-type companies from China delivering into America. They don't want to use the UPS and FedEx and these guys. They're trying to create their own companies, including Jack Ma, who was the founder of Alibaba. So the whole thing is, so what you're finding now is there's a huge increase in final yard delivery, final inch delivery in residential and urban areas, which wasn't there before. If you went to UPS and FedEx and DHL and said, I want to go into a residential area, they charge you $2,000 a carton. And they know you're not going to pay it. So that's their way of saying, no, thank you. I'm not going to do that. That's not my business. You go to USPS or you go to Canada Post. They can't cope. But now that's the nature of the business. So they're all trying to gravitate and move and rotate to do that type of business. So that's all changing. So it's going to affect Main Street. So let's look at investments. By its very nature, Wall Street and Toronto, the stock exchange guys, they invest your and my money for one reason, to give a return to attract more money to get bigger. That's why America will not build microchip factories, because it costs just as much to build a microchip factory as it costs you to build a nuclear plant. And there's a thing called Moore's Law, which says every 6 months to 12 months in the electronics industry, it doubles in technology. So you're out of date in 6 to 12 months, which means I've got to sink some more billions of dollars into that microchip factory just to keep abreast of where the world's headed. That means I'm not going to get any return on investment, which means that the private investors are not going to build microchip factories. It's going to force a federal intervention, which is starting to happen. And they're trying, and part of Pelosi's trip to Taiwan was to try and convince TSWC and those guys to start investing in America. They're talking about Phoenix in Arizona. They're talking about Illinois. But who knows? We'll wait and see what happens there. So the small business and the Main Street are going to be affected. But I think what's also happened very subtly, Bob, if you look at the airlines, you look at the airports, they all had these onerous union contracts, and they were bound by those contracts. And then along came a godsend called COVID-19. And they said, this is force majeure. They broke all those contracts. And now those people aren't coming back. Those employees have moved off. They found other employment and they're not coming back. Hence, you've seen all the chaos. You go to London Heathrow. They've got baggage packed to the ceilings. You can't get through Schiphol in Amsterdam. Getting through Frankfurt is like a needle in a haystack. So all these guys use this opportunistic moment of COVID-19 to break all their union contracts. Union members are gone. They're not coming back. So Main Street suffers, the holiday system suffers. The small traders are going to suffer tremendously in the next 6 months.
That was my guest, Glenn Ross of the ACC Group in Surrey, British Columbia. Go to accgroupco.com for more information, and we'll have more next week from Glenn on the Breaker.News podcast. News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Anonymous welcomes Nancy Pelosi to Taiwan on hacked Chinese government website. Anonymous hacked into China's Heilongjiang Society Scientific Community Federation website. It changed a page to read Taiwan Number One, Taiwan's national flag and emblem, photos of Pelosi and Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen, and the words Taiwan welcomes U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, among other elements. Meanwhile, ministers from Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the UK, the US, and the EU said China had no reason to use Pelosi's visit to Taiwan to ramp up military activity near Taiwan. They pointed out that it is normal for legislators to travel globally. In Kyoto news, Tokyo Olympic sponsors deny relationship with organizing committee exec suspected of bribery. Of the 69 companies contacted, all 64 of those that responded said that they did not sign a contract with Haruyuki Takahashi's consulting firm. Takahashi, 78, is believed to have received around $340,000 until last July from Aoki Holdings after the company he headed reached a consulting deal with a retailer in September 2017. In Hong Kong Free Press, six public figures test positive as daily infections exceed 5,000 for the first time since April. Among the 5,020 COVID-19 infections reported on Thursday, 247 cases were imported. The city also recorded three new deaths. The Privacy Commissioner's Assistant, the Assistant to the Secretary for the Environment and Ecology, Assistant to the Secretary for the Treasury, and Director of the Fire Services were among those who tested positive. Their offices were cleared and disinfected. They have gone into isolation. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
news podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, arrest made in 2019 homicide of Portland anti-fascist activist Sean Kelleher, police say. Officers arrested Christopher E. Kneipp, 47, on a single count of second-degree murder. Kelleher, 23, was fatally struck by an SUV in October 2019. Was Kelleher killed over his activism? He may have been involved in a random drunken dispute near the Oregon Democratic Party headquarters. Kneipp had at least 20 traffic citations dating back to the 1990s. On King 5, there are 166 reported cases of monkeypox in Washington state. As of August 3rd, Department of Health said 166 cases have been reported, with the majority in King County. The same day, the federal government declared it a public health emergency. Other cases were reported in Whatcom, Snohomish, Pierce, Lewis, Yakima, Benton, Cowlitz, Clark, Mason, and Kitsap counties. The first case was reported May 23rd in King County, and cases double every 7 to 8 days. In the Times-Colonist, Toronto Raptors to hold NBA training camp at University of Victoria. Raptors will be at UVic campus for the training camp September 26th to October 1st. The Raptors will break camp in Victoria to play 5 preseason games, including October 2nd against the Utah Jazz at Rogers Place in Edmonton, and October 14th against the Boston Celtics at the Bell Center in Montreal. This will be the 11th time the Raptors have held their training camp outside Toronto, and the 6th time in BC. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
The Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the youth of British Columbia, the future of British Columbia. If you're under 30, thank you for listening. It's International Youth Day on August 12th. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of August 7th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 7th of August in the following years, these famous folks were born? In 1958, Iron Maiden's Bruce Dickinson. In 1959, BC Premier John Horgan. 1960, David Duchovny of the X-Files. 1965, Canadian figure skater Elizabeth Manley. And in 1987, Sid the Kid, hockey's Sidney Crosby. Happy birthday to them. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.